Welcome to the Secrets of High Demand Coaches podcast, where I interview some of the best coaches in the business to find their secrets and share them with the world. I'm Scott Rittheimer, founder and CEO of Scale Architects, and we help founders and leaders find the right coach at the right time so they can achieve the predictable success they deserve. And a huge part of that is helping great coaches do great work that creates enormous demand for their services with way less effort. If you're a high demand coach, I'd absolutely love to share your story and expertise as well. So stick around to the end of the show and we'll reveal how you can be our next guest in 15 to 20 minutes. Let's go. Hello, hello, and welcome. Welcome once again to the Secrets of the High Demand Coach podcast. And I am here with yet another high demand coach. That is the one, the only, Deb Crow. Now, Deb is an executive and business coach with over 30 years of global experience in top Fortune 500 companies spanning four continents. She's also been coaching C-suite leaders, executive professionals, teams, and businesses to success. Now, Deborah has a heart-centered entrepreneurial leadership approach, and with a deep passion for making a positive impact, she has dedicated her career to creating ventures that prioritize people and the planet. She draws from a diverse background, combining business acumen with a compassionate approach to create a harmonious balance between profitability and social responsibility. And I'm very excited that Deb has actually published her first solo book. It's called The Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook. And we'll dive into that here in just a moment. But before all that, Deb, first I want to say welcome to the show. So excited to have you here. I'm wondering if we could just rewind a little bit and go to your time before you started coaching. What were you doing before coaching and why did you ultimately make the leap?
Yeah, Scott, thanks so much for having me on your podcast. So before coaching, I was in the medical rehabilitation world and I was a neurotrauma case manager. So I would look after people who had serious injuries, whether that would be in the workplace or an automobile accident, things like brain injury, spinal cord injury, catastrophic orthopedic injury, and sometimes all three. And I would get them back to life or a little bit of autonomy. Sometimes I had the pleasure and privilege of returning them to work, but I would manage big, big teams with all the different modalities of therapy. And yeah, I did that for 23 years.
Wow. Wow. And so when did coaching become something that I'm sure, you know, when you look at most coaches, they've been coaching all their career. But when was it, hey, it's time to make the leap, do this formally and really change this to your primary occupation?
It wasn't my choice. I think it was that gentle tap that we get from the universe sometimes that says, hey, I want you over here. I had a phone call from an adjudicator from a disability insurance company. And she started the phone call like this. She said, Deb, I heard you're really great at getting people back to work. And I was like, I am. I enjoy that. She said, I have five executives on stress claims. Can you take them on? And I was testifying in court to convince a jury that the patients that I had were significantly catastrophically injured. And I remember coming home and saying to my husband, I hate this. I'm not enjoying this. It's ridiculous that I have to go to bat for these people when you can clearly see that they're catastrophically injured. And then I get that phone call. So I said to her, I'll take them on. And I'm thinking in my mind, here's a reprieve from the hard work. Little did I know my life was going to take a 180 in 10 months. So from the date of that phone call to 10 months later, I had three VPs and two CEOs. They all went on long-term disability. They all were diagnosed palliative. I lost them all to cancer, Scott. And then here's the goosebumpy. They landed up in our local hospice where I was volunteering. And I just had this intersection of, you know, we talk about 3 degrees of separation. There wasn't even half a degree. Wow. And so I talk about them every day because I want to keep their legacy alive. But I held their hand at the end of life and I heard their story and I heard what they didn't get to say. and I heard the regret, and I knew the story that they were dying with inside of them. And they opened my eyes that I had been coaching all along with these wow. patients and their families and with lawyers and all the people. And I promised them I would do something about it, but I didn't know in the moment what that was going to be, because I needed to grieve these people. This was a trigger memory for me because I had lost so much of my family to cancer. Volunteering at hospice was part of my grief journey to heal, because I was just a little farther down the road in my grief journey than the families and people that I had the pleasure to sit with at the end of life. So I took about 18 months. I looked at all the coaching programs, decided what I was going to do, who I wanted to certify with, all the extrinsic logistical things. And then my coach had said to me, what are you going to do with this gift? And which I, you know, in the moment thought, what a ridiculous question, because I wasn't in that frame of mind. And then 18 months later, I closed my medical practice, helped all my staff find new jobs.
Wow.
And I laterally moved into coaching, and that was 15 years ago.
Wow. So tell us a little bit, who do you tend to work with? Who's a typical a client that you work with? And what would you say is some of the most important work you do for them?
So a typical client for me is, again, it comes back to those extrinsic labels that we have to use, because I'm global and I'm in different sectors. I always say I'm in the people business when people ask me what sector I work in. Manager level all the way up to C-suite is my main executive, if you will, that I work with. And my favorite question that I get from them when we start coaching is, Deb, can we do some life coaching too? And I always say, I'm going to coach the whole person. And I talk about this in my book. Our life shows up in our work, and our work shows up in our life. So it's very important that that sounding board part is there, not just for them as a leader, but also for their life, because people think people at high levels have it all, and they don't realize how lonely they are and how much responsibility is coming at them in nanoseconds all day long. So that's primarily who I work with, but I also work with three large organizations. I do a lot of team coaching, team facilitation. And since my book's come out, we've used it as a tool to have informal fireside chats so we can get to some of the real meaty, scary topics that people don't like talking about, especially introverts on a team or accidental leaders. And the book's just really opened up the bandwidth to have even more meaningful aligned conversations with heart-centered leadership languaging.
Yeah. That's so good. So the name, if I'm correct, is the Heart-Centered Leadership Playbook. Is that right?
That's correct.
Excellent. So there's a lot in just the title that I kind of want to unpack, but why did you write the book? What's the big idea?
I wrote the book because I wanted to write it for 30 years. And it was that COVID repetitive, what do I tell my people? Visceral level of fear from all levels of leadership. And having them take their stand in vulnerability while being a leader, executing humility, and letting them know that they don't know what the next step is, because none of us knew. We didn't have a file folder to go to. So some of the strategies is languaging. I'm a big proponent of not using strength and weakness. I think both can carry heavy negative connotation. I like to talk about it from a behavioral perspective because that's my background in neuroscience. I love, you know, digging into deductive reasoning. Why do we think like this? What is our habit of thinking? And when we can keep extrinsic values in the forefront of our thoughts, it becomes our default for leadership. And I do believe that we need to invert the fraction of profit over people, and it needs to be people over profit, especially for what we've gone through as a global society in the last 4 years.
Yeah, yeah. So some may hear that, especially even as you're setting it up there, they may hear this idea of heart-centered leadership and think it's soft. But from the research that I did, there are components of it that we might connect to being soft, but there's nothing easy about this, right? There's nothing soft and kind of wooey about this. So why is it that heart-centered leadership, in your opinion, is so important to business and future business success?
Well, if you look at traditional business acumen, it's made up of three components: knowledge, skills, and abilities. The last sentence in my introduction of my book says, you do not need initials after your name to be kind. To be kind, what do we need? Knowledge, skills, and abilities. So I am not sure why this isn't an elective in education, post-secondary education, graduate work, etc. To me, I think heart-centered leadership belongs in the middle of that business acumen Venn diagram, because if you don't lead with heart, you're not going to have your metrics because your people aren't going to stay. And if we've learned anything from the pandemic, our talent pool is getting smaller. And we have an ageism problem because the baby boomers and my generation of Gen X, we are now the dominant population globally. So we have all these different kind of extrinsic and systemic values and thoughts going on. And to me, when a leader is heart-centered, and my definition is honoring your connection with people, if I'm your leader, Scott, I want to inspire you to be a better leader. Is that going to come with some projects and tasks and extrinsic and systemic things? Absolutely. But our conversations will be meaningful, aligned, and always in the forefront of intrinsic value.
One of the things that you've talked about a couple of times through the conversation so far is this idea of kind of your accidental step into coaching, sometimes the accidental leader, right? Someone who does a great job, finds himself in a leader position, is like, what is going on? Like, why am I here? So, and then in your book, you talk about this idea of embracing the call to leadership. What is the call to leadership and how do we embrace it?
The call to leadership is acknowledging your own level of self-awareness and not being afraid to say the wrong thing, fail forward, be able to become a master of the art of heart in life and leadership, which is failing forward and being able to convert all those failures into learning opportunities and sharing those within your leadership so people can see you as real and vulnerable. And that fosters trust and rapport. And those are the two main fundamental values of any culture, of any leader to, you know, lead an organization that is healthy and vital within their organizational culture. There's so many things that fall off of that. But being an accidental leader are those people who show such greatness. And a lot of times, at least in my coaching practice, they're introverts and they have so much to give and they're innovative and progressive. And they may just not be that gregarious person on the team that wants to present their ideas in front of the whole team. They like that one-on-one. And a lot of times when I have their conversations with them, their creativity and visionary leadership is so open and wide. It's at the level of a CEO in terms of visionary leadership, but they're just independent and creative. So when they get these promotions, they see it as a negative because they say things like, I don't want to look after a team of people. I just want to go back to my lab, or I just want to go back to my data, or I just want to go back to my spreadsheet. Like, why is this happening to me? And it's all in the way you frame the conversation to say, you know, Scott saw something in you and this is a great thing. And then they say, but I don't know how to lead people. And then when you're able to walk them through that they already are, and no one has mentored them before because they are an introvert. I see this happen on a weekly basis. And it's just like, it's to me, it's like a fresh new garden when you're seeing things starting to bloom. And then they realize that their self-awareness has already been there, but someone's tapping into helping them foster it and grow it. And that it does have a foundational place in their leadership. And it's just beautiful to witness as a coach.
Wow. Wow. So what advice would you give to maybe an executive or a senior leader who's listening to that and saying, I wonder if we're taking care of our introverts and those that are coming out. What are some steps that they could take to really help their introverts to shine in their way?
You know, I think it's some of my heart-centered leadership qualities. It's attentively listening, and it's watching who used to speak in meetings and isn't speaking now, who hasn't come up with an idea for a while. And it's watching all of the nonverbal communication, because that's 85%. And then having a conversation to say, Scott, I noticed you didn't say anything in the meeting today, and doing those check-ins. You know, how are things going? Is your workload okay? Do you need some support? Is there anything you want to bounce off of me? And kind of reverse asking those questions to get to the outcome that you want as the leader, but doing it in a soft, gentle way so that they don't think like they're being reprimanded. Because again, that's an HR value that I also see in a lot of companies and with leaders. They don't want to say something derogatory or negative because they don't want it to show up in a cross exchange on their next performance review. We have to have that psychologically safe space to be able to have this conversation, because when we do, Scott, the richness that comes out of it, you may be taking that C-suite or that executive leadership member down a whole other level of thinking that they hadn't even thought of. And that's the beauty of that.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so true. And as you're saying that, I'm thinking even a step ahead of this is so many leaders, and I see this even more since COVID, they're going into these meetings trying to answer all the questions, right? I don't have time, so I'm going to have a meeting. I'm going to get everyone in a room. I'm going to answer all their questions and get them out. How could you possibly have the time to even pay attention to what you just talked about in picking up those nuances in meetings if you're in the mode of, I've got to make all the decisions, I've got to figure it all out? So how do folks start to make that turn to where they can even show up in meetings with the capacity to do that?
They have to quiet their mind. That's the number one thing that I work on with them. I'm also a yoga teacher, so I bring a lot of that philosophy into my coaching. And the case manager shows up every day when I'm coaching. Those transferable skills that we talked about, you know, at the beginning of the call, a quiet mind can observe to their best capacity possible. And they also have to set intention. There's no point in having a meeting to add it to the meeting bloat that they already have if there's no intention for the outcome. And sometimes it's that juggling of the priorities of the priorities of the priorities, and knowing that you need, not out of obligation, but out of self-directed leadership, you need to come out of the meeting knowing X or Y.
Yeah.
And like I said, when you engage in those conversations, the X and Y can take a 180 degree turn, and that might bring you on a better path than you even anticipated.
Wow. So I've got a question for you. I like to ask all my guests, and it's this. What's the biggest secret you wish wasn't a secret at all? What's that one thing that you wish everybody watching or listening today knew?
A secret in general or a secret about me?
A secret about heart-centered leadership.
Oh, that's easy. If people could realize that they can have a conversation in a coffee shop with a friend or in someone that they're related to in their house, you can be that person while you're in a business meeting. And that's how you master the art of heart and life and leadership. We don't have to be two different people because we switch from our personal life to our professional life. We are that same person. We have to learn how to be and allow heart-centeredness to be with us at all times, regardless of where we are or who we're speaking to. That's the secret I wish would not be a secret.
That's great. That is so good. So good. So there's folks listening to this and they're just resonating with every word. There's challenge in it and there's hope in it. They want to know how they can find out more. Where can we get a copy of your book, and where can folks find more out about you and the work that you do?
So everything is on my website, deadcrow.com. Crow has an E. I am not related to Russell Crowe. I do get asked that a lot, though. Wish I was. My book is available on all of the online bookstores. The biggest place people are getting it is on Amazon. And if you're an ebook person or a paperback person or an audiobook, I just finished my audiobook last week. So everything's there in the modality, whether you like to read or listen. And all my socials are there.
Fantastic. So head on out. If you're listening to this and anything that Deb has said has hit you, go get a copy of her book, The Heart-Centered Leader Playbook. I think I got that right. It's fantastic. Had a chance to look at it briefly here leading up to this conversation. And I know I want to dig in more myself. So Deb, thanks so much for being here. What an honor and privilege to have you on the show. So excited to have been able to have this conversation. And for those of you watching and listening, you know your time and attention mean the world to us. I hope you got as much out of this conversation as I know I did, and I cannot wait to see you next time. Take care. Scott Ritzheimer here. Thank you so much for listening to the Secrets of High Demand Coaches podcast. If you are a successful coach, consultant, or advisor who's built a strong book of business and would like to be on the program, please visit go.scalearchitects.com. And if you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media and just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials? If you know someone who'd be a great guest, you can tag them on social media to let them know about the show. And make sure you include the hashtag #HighDemandCoaching. I love seeing your posts. I love seeing your guest suggestions. Thank you so much. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any of those episodes, go ahead and subscribe now. Your thumbs up, your ratings, your reviews, they go a long way to help us promote the show, and they mean a lot to me and my team. If you want to know more, you can go to our website, www.scalearchitects.com, or you can follow me or the company on LinkedIn, Facebook, or Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.